A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
He's teaching me yoga poses.
Yeah. I learned yoga from Nick.
While he has a pizza cutter in one hand and a stretch in the other.
Now arriving on Cultaholic Island, celebrating her first full year in the world of wrestling and embarking on her second with big plans ahead. Guys, gals, non-binary pals, it's Soraya Sabin. How you doing?
I am doing fantastic.
We've got to talk about the Dragon Ball Z love that you gave during your GCW debut. It was super subtle, but then when it was pointed out, I went, I like that, because there was a Dragon Ball Z nod in your GCW debut.
Oh, 100%. It's in everything that I do. It's just, it's not super obvious, and I don't like make it too like in your face, but the inspiration's there.
Where did your love for Dragon Ball Z come from?
I just remember growing up with it. Like my brother and my older cousins were into it, and I was like, "What is this? Like I don't know what this is. I'm a child, and they're, you know, like 5-6 years older than me." And then like slowly, I started like watching it on TV, and I was like, "This is so freaking cool!" Like all the fights, the different transformations. And it's just one of those things that, like, as I got older, it just kind of stuck with me, and I just kind of kept watching it and kept playing the games and all that stuff.
Are there any little elements away from the ring gear that in your repertoire you can maybe attribute to a bit of Dragon Ball Z love or a bit of anime love?
So not so much in like moveset currently, but sort of like the whole inspiration for like the Soraya Sabre character, which ultimately is just kind of like me dialed up a little bit, is this idea that I wanted to kind of always test my limits and always try and like shatter that like barrier of like how far I can go, which is a lot of like the later Dragon Ball Z and then the Dragon Ball Super, which is a separate thing, of they're constantly trying to like push to this like next level and ascend to this next level. And that was kind of like the idea that I've been having with wrestling, is like, you know, I'm currently at a level, but how much training do I got to do to burst through to that next level and to kind of like break my limits? And so that's kind of like the mindset that I have at the moment.
Well, not only do you have a really good grounding, but you've been limit breaking in your first full year of wrestling. And we're going to talk all about that. But as well as that, I set you the seemingly impossible challenge, Soraya, of narrowing down the 3 wrestling matches that you would take with you to watch while stranded metaphorically on a desert island. And we spoke during the week and you said that this has been a bit of a nightmare for you.
It has been, you have no idea how hard this has been to narrow it down to 3 matches.
It's horrible, isn't it? So what we're going to do is we'll go through them as we chat today, one by one by one. So let's start with your first one, Sarai. What would you like your first one to be?
All right. So the first one was the easiest one. It was always number one. It never wavered from the list. It was always going to be in the 3. It is from The Wrestler and the feud and the series of matches that if they did not exist, I probably would not be sitting here on this call with you today. It is, of course, Kenny Omega versus Kazuchika Okada 4 from Dominion 2018. 2 out of 3 falls, 64 minutes. what can I say?
So this is one of a pantheon of incredible matches that they have had. But what is it about this one that just tips it over the bar in comparison to the others?
It was the culmination of like 2 years worth of like story with like I said, Kenny Omega, my favorite wrestler of all time. He was like when I first discovered New Japan and stepped out of my like only WWE bubble, like he was that first wrestler that I kind of like gravitated to. And I thought like, wow, this guy is so cool. And watching that story of him constantly trying to beat Okada, he never made it. And then finally he did, he had his moment. It's, you know, obviously the longest match of the group. It was, in my opinion, the best match of the group. Some people, you know, say, you know, different things in regards to which one they out of the four they think is the best. But I think the culmination of the story, him winning the championship, had the Golden Elite around him celebrating, is almost brings a tear to my eye. You know, it's a perfect moment.
It's it was a true testament of the skill and the chemistry those two have for that match to go as long as it did, and they'd go longer. But to put it together in such a way where you're constantly dialed into it, is there a particular moment from that match that when you think about it comes to mind?
Not like a specific moment off the top of my head. I think it was just, if I recall correctly, I think it was Okada who got the first fall, and it was the idea that like when that happened, it's like, okay, Kenny's now got to beat him twice in a row, like pressure's on. Like anytime I've seen those two or three falls matches and the first fall happens, it's like, okay, now whoever, they got to get two falls in a row, and they already struggled to get one fall. And that pressure and that sort of like urgency kind of like ensues, and it's just incredible.
You do credit Omega and Okada as the two that brought you back to wrestling, because you were into your wrestling at a young age. And like many of us, it just sort of falls away. It dies on the vine a little bit. Can you remember, not so much when you, we'll do both. Can you remember when you started initially watching wrestling, and can you remember when you stopped?
So I was always watching wrestling. It was one of those things where like Monday night, Raw was on the TV. Like parents, grandparents, they watched as kids and growing up. So like it was, we were just a wrestling family, but we never really watched, outside of like a few episodes of TNA, we never really watched like anything outside of WWE. And then I didn't have the network at the time, so I wasn't even watching NXT when it was like prime black and gold era at first. And so, you know, we were just watching Raw and SmackDown every week. And you know, some of my earliest memories were like me and all the cousins and aunts and uncles gathered around the big screen TV watching the pay-per-views. And so like it was always there. But as far as like falling out of love, I never stopped watching wrestling. It just kind of got to that point to where, all right, it's Monday, turn on wrestling. There wasn't like a significant like person or story that I was just like gravitated to, because this was like, you know, mid to late, you know, 2010s was when I found New Japan. And by that point, you know, John Cena was one of my favorites growing up, and he had kind of started phasing out, and they were trying to introduce like all these like newer people. You know, the Shield was starting to get pushed more, and then like AJ Styles came over, who I'd only like heard of like once or twice. And so there just wasn't like that. I didn't have that person. Like I had my few that I liked, but I didn't have like that person or that storyline that I was just so like gravitated to. And then obviously, I found New Japan through a video that someone had posted, I want to say on YouTube, and it was Wrestle Kingdom 10, AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura. It was like both of their last like main singles matches before they went to WWE. And I was like, what is this? Like, this is an entirely different style. Like, I'm used to watching like 5 minute comedy matches, and this is like a 20 minute sports based. They're just beating the heck out of each other. Like, it was a whole new world.
And it really is. It's night and day when you compare sort of the sports entertainment style that WWE's had. And if you've always had that, then it is a shock to the system.
Yeah.
You mentioned about watching with aunties and uncles and cousins all gathered around. Did you have a lot of family around you growing up?
I mean, like, growing up, yeah, we were all very, like, close, like, location-wise. Like, we all lived, like, right next to each other. I mean, eventually we moved away and we weren't, like, near them as much. But yeah, like, when I was, I'm talking about, like, really little, like, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, and I had those, like, prime years of watching wrestling. Like, all the cousins, the grandparents were right next to us. Like, it was all there.
Was there a desire at that young age to do it, or did you just enjoy watching it with family?
I guess the thought had never even crossed my mind. I was like, I didn't know, like, how people got into it. Like, because I'm just like a dumb kid from, you know, North Georgia, the middle of nowhere. Like, I don't know how you become a wrestler. I just knew that, like, we turned on wrestling and I watched it every week, and I had all the action figures in the ring, and every video game that came out every year I had to get on. And it wasn't until much later on when I even, like, contemplated the idea of, like, doing it myself.
When people play the games, a lot of the time they get into that creator wrestler mode, and there are go-to characters that they make, or they bring themselves to life through the game. Did you do the same?
I never, like, at least before I, like, came out as transgender and everything, I never, like, made a character that I thought, like, looked just like me. I always tried to make, like, what I just thought, like, oh, that's a cool looking character. And, like, I can't even, like, describe, like, look-wise, like, how that character looked in comparison to, like, a real-life wrestler. I just remember I was like, oh, that's a cool hairstyle, and that's a cool, like, piece of clothing. The only thing I remember that, you know, that creator wrestler had, of, like, the boy creator wrestler, was, I don't think he has it anymore, but Shinsuke Nakamura used to have this, like, bandana that he'd wear, like, on his bicep, or it was like an armband or like a bandana or something. And I just remember, like, I had that on one of my wrestlers. It's like the only thing I can remember. And I want to say I had, like, an orange and black color scheme, but, like, other than that, I can't remember what old creative wrestler me looked like. I know now I kind of, like, try and create to look what I look like now, but back then I was just kind of like, that's a cool hairstyle, that's a cool, like, gear.
Had wrestling not come along for you in the way that it has, actually, and more so when you were growing up, what was the plan? Was there something that you were passionate about throwing yourself into that wasn't wrestling?
Honestly, no. I was that kid who never had it figured out. Like, I did not know what I wanted to do, like, career-wise. I didn't go to college. I almost joined the military, but that didn't happen. Because of a few different reasons. And it was just, I never had, like, that, like, idea of, like, this is what I want to do. I'm going to become a whatever. Like, I just kind of worked my way through life with, like, no idea.
The,
like,
technical term is that you just, I get that.
Right. I just, like, every couple of months I'd have, like, a new idea. I'm like, you know what? I want to do that. And then, like, 3 months later, I'd change it. I'm like, I'm going to do that. And I could never figure out what that one thing was.
What was one of the short flights of fancy that you had in terms of possible future career?
Let's see. There were several. Obviously, like I said, almost did the military. I think at one point it was like video game designer. I think there was like a psychologist in there at one point, like doing like mental health stuff. I think at one point I even said like a real estate agent. I had no idea what I wanted.
Wow,
to do.
you've covered the gamut there,
right?
Pretty much everything.
Just kind of, you know, cover everything, you know, why not?
But that's the thing, when you are growing up, there's so many questions in general, and there does feel like there's that pressure to kind of, because you always get the vibe that everyone else around you has got it together.
Oh, 100%.
You
go,
well, you know, and in the truth being, when you dig a little deeper, nah, they haven't, but you just think they have, and you worry that you haven't.
Well, it's like, and you're going through, you know, school, and everyone's like, oh, like after, you know, I finish the school, I'm going to go to, you know, this university, and I'm going to study to be a doctor or a lawyer or a teacher. And I'm like, cool. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just kind of taking each day as it comes. And if something happens, it happens.
Well, spinning on, and you've discovered Omega and Okada and the world of wrestling outside of WWE. At what point in this does the Nightmare Factory enter the conversation?
So, I mean, obviously, you know, I was a huge fan of Bullet Club, huge fan of the Elite. And it wasn't till, honestly, like 2021, I started looking at, like, I just would Google wrestling schools near me, and never took any serious steps towards it. Just every few months I'd be like, wrestling schools nearby, and I'd like look at the websites, and then I'd like forget about it. And then like 2022 came along, and I just kept looking up schools. I kept like coming back to like the Nightmare Factory's like website, and I'd watch like all the student showcases, and I'm like, wow, like if I'm gonna train to be a wrestler, like I'm gonna go there. And I just, and it took a lot of like me like contemplating. I'm like, nah, I'm never gonna be a wrestler. Like, who does that? Like how insane is that to me, being, you know, 26 years old, 25 years old, whatever age I was, to be like, I'm going to sign up to go to wrestling school because that's what I'm doing with my life at this age. And then with the help of like some friends and the person I was dating at the time, I just kind of like, you know what, screw it. I'm going to do it. It's not that far away from me. I figured out how to do it financially. Screw it. Worst case scenario, I take a bump the first day, realize I don't like it, go home. I can at least say I tried.
So you are prepared to take it and go, well, we'll see where it goes. Because at this point, you've considered being a real estate agent, for goodness sake. You might as well consider being a wrestler. And you
why
know,
not?
Why not? Everything else you've thought of. The Nightmare Factory has such a strong reputation, like Cody Rhodes, QT Marshall, among the names that are training there. And you would have known of the Elite and the, you know, the connections that there are with the Elite and the Nightmare Factory. Was it intimidating joining a school like that, where you were already quite dialed into what quite a few of them were doing?
I mean, it definitely, well, like when I joined in, because it's like they have like their night class where like all the former students train, and then they have like the beginner class, which, you know, everyone there, like, we don't know what they're doing. Half of us can barely step in between the ropes without like tripping, let alone like run the ropes or do a roll. But it was kind of like mind-boggling, because like you walk in first day and, you know, QT Marshall's standing right there, who, you know, you see on AEW all the time at that point. And then day two, Cody Rhodes comes walking in, and it's just like, I see this guy on TV. I've watched this guy wrestle. I've played him in the video games. Like, and then just like to meet them in person, it's like, how is this my life?
How did those first few weeks of wrestling training vary to what you thought it was going to be?
I don't even know if it varied so much. Like my whole mindset going in was like, I didn't know if I'd make it through the 12 week camp. Let's be honest. I did not know if I would make it to the day that you like graduate and have your debut match, because I was afraid of the idea of taking a bump. Like, I just could not get out of my head this idea of taking a bump, because I'm like, it's going to hurt. Like, I have such a low pain tolerance. And there were several times where I would like keep messing up or like keep like, falling down wrong, and they're like, you're not doing it right. And I just couldn't get out of my own head about it because I was like so afraid that I was gonna like hurt myself to the point to where like I almost quit the camp multiple times.
I mean, you to watch you wrestle, you would not assume that that was ever an issue. But what was the moment for you when that clicked? When you find when the fear of bumps went away and everything started falling into place? Can you remember the moment where you went, "Oh, this is fine. I've not died."
I don't remember if there was like a specific like moment where like all that fear went away, because there's still some times where like, ooh, we're like the idea of taking this move is still very scary to me. Or like the idea of landing a certain way is still like, makes me nervous, but like I've definitely gotten a lot more like comfortable with it. I remember there was a day and we were learning how to do back elbows. Like, you're running off the ropes, your opponent hits you with a back elbow, you fall down on your back. Simple, shouldn't be a problem, just a back bump. And I kept not bumping. I would just keep running, and the person would have to be like, what are you doing? You're supposed to hit the elbow. I'm supposed to hit the elbow and fall down. And I just kept running straight. I'm like, nope, I don't want to fall. Tim.
Some say Soraya Saber is still running to this day.
And it took one, because we were trying to do these with each other, like the other students, and it took one of the coaches kind of getting irritated with me and be like, you know what, I'm gonna give you a back elbow and I'm not gonna hurt you with it, but I'm gonna make sure it's stiff enough to where you're going to have to fall down. And I think after that I kind of like I'm like, all right, I just got to do it. I just got to bump. It's what it is. And like making me take that bump kind of like broke a little bit of that like barrier in my mind, I guess.
That's it. I just wonder if there was that moment. And who was it that gave you the elbow?
He is a local wrestler by the name of Vari Morales. He's appeared on like AEW Dark and done like enhancement stuff a few times, but he does a lot of stuff locally in the area. I think he works in Florida some stuff too, but he was one of the trainers at the time. I don't know if he's still there. But he kind of was like, all right, I'm gonna make you bump. And he did.
And he absolutely did.
Yeah.
We want to talk a bit more about your time at Nightmare, but let's get your second match for now, though, Soraya. So, an Omega Okada classic already in the pocket. What's your second one going to be?
So, like I said, first match was always first match. That one was always locked. This one was between two. Because, like I said, Kenny Omega, favorite wrestler, second favorite wrestler, probably also around that same sort of level as favorite wrestler would be Will Ospreay. And I flip-flop back between the two, almost chose Ospreay versus Michael Oku from the recent RevPro show, but because it features my two favorites, I chose Kenny Omega versus Will Ospreay from the Tokyo Dome, Wrestle Kingdom last year. I had to have it on the list.
That is an excellent match and a real sort of coming out party for Osprey in there with Omega, like a graduation up. You know, we talk about you graduating in the Nightmare Factory, but you know, that's a graduation to heavyweights in New Japan for Will Ospreay.
Definitely.
He's such an interesting guy to follow online because I, for one, like yourself, think he's incredible. I've had the pleasure of getting to announce him to the ring. I think he's amazing. Just a really lovely guy to be around, but very polarizing in the sense that his style, a lot of people compare, I think erroneously, to acrobatics and gymnastics. And I obviously, you know, as a fan of his, you don't agree with that idea potentially, but you see a lot of that discourse online about him.
I feel like I saw more of it back when he still was in that junior heavyweight division and he was having like the match with Ricochet for the Best of the Super Juniors where they were doing all of the flips But I feel like as he has like evolved as a talent, he's kind of adjusted his style some, and he's, you know, he is a little less high flying. I mean, he still does it, but and he does like a lot more strikes and like will feature some more like strength based stuff into him that maybe he didn't like originally have. So I feel like if anyone still has that like preconceived notion, maybe they just haven't watched enough of like current Will Ospreay as opposed to like, you know, young Will Ospreay. I guess is what I would say.
Osprey and Omega are from New Japan. Can you remember where you were when you watched it for the first time?
I was right here on my bed.
Oh, nice.
I woke up early in the morning because like I knew before the match even happened, I knew it was going to be special. I knew it was going to be amazing. And typically I try and like wake up and like watch, you know, the Wrestle Kingdom shows like on my computer because it's like 3 a.m. when it happens for us here on the East Coast. And I remember I just set an alarm, wake up and just watch it in bed on my computer. And yeah.
It's an incredible match. It's Ospreay graduating to heavyweight, and you graduated from the Nightmare Factory. And with your and like you said, you basically you go through that program, and if you're good enough, if you achieve enough, then you get onto the card for the end of the semester run. Is that correct?
So it's a 12-week program, and as long as you make it through the 12 weeks, you have the student showcase, which is like everyone has a match. What and it's either well, a lot of times you'll either face someone who is from your class, like a fellow, you know, student that trained alongside of you, or you will face like a former student, like someone who trained there from a previous group and who maybe still trains there as part of like the advanced class. That way they kind of have like someone who's a little bit more experienced to for you to compete against, which was the case for me.
So you were in there with Angela Risk then.
It's Angelica Risk.
Oh, Angelica Risk. I apologize.
Yeah. She actually faced Mariah May on AEW the other day, which was kind of cool.
Oh yeah, that was something cool to see.
She's fantastic. I think more places should be using her. I think she's very underappreciated, I guess would be the term I'd say. But that whole experience was really cool because like while we were, you know, practicing for that, Cody Rhodes was very like hands-on in it. And the whole time that we were going through our camp was right after he had injured his pec muscle and had that crazy Hell in a Cell match with Seth Rollins. Like that was the week that we started training was when that happened. But that whole process was crazy. And looking back at that match, just seeing like how nervous I was and I didn't know what I was doing. I'm like, oh, I messed up this move and like it clearly shows on my face that I messed up, but I gotta keep going. And then the main thing I remember, all the coaches were watching on a monitor in like a separate room. And I remember we got through the match and I walked through the curtain and Cody Rhodes made sure he was the first person like standing there like to talk to me after the match was over, which meant the world. It meant the world to me, not gonna lie.
What did he say to you?
He was just being very nice, very complimentary, you know, congratulating me, said I did a good job. He's like, I've seen people who's been wrestling for years who, you know, can't wrestle like that. And I'm like, I didn't do that great, I promise you, but thank you. I know you're saying this because you're my coach, but it definitely like it felt really nice. And I remember I was like tearing up a little bit as we were like walking backstage, and it was just a cool moment.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You're so new into wrestling in the grand scheme of things. Like we said at the very beginning, this is the start of your second full year in the pro wrestling world. And you do it as your true self now. And I'm keen to know, when did you get in touch with who you really were and make the decision to transition?
So that actually happened long before I started wrestling. Because I started wrestling in 2022. But I have been openly and publicly out since 2015. So I've been on that journey for a long time. Like, I've already done all the legal and medical stuff. Like, I was already done with, you know, everything that people would kind of consider like part of that transition by the time I even started wrestling training. But I still knew that I wanted to like represent that as I started wrestling, because, and I've said this before in previous interviews, like growing up, there wasn't a lot of like positive like representation for people like myself on like mainstream wrestling. And I thought, you know, if I could like be that sort of like inspiration and show people like, oh, well, like I'm a trans person and like I'm wrestling and like I'm chasing my dreams, like you can do it too. And like, obviously there's been people since who have kind of like pioneered that sort of like growing change, whether it's, you know, Nyla Rose, Giselle Shaw, Kid Bandit, who I know y'all interviewed before, who also from the Nightmare Factory. And it's just one of those things where it's like, even though I was already kind of past that point of like figuring all that stuff out, I still wanted to keep that as part of me and showcase that part to the world because I'm proud of it.
When did you realize that this was something that you needed to do? Because we're back in 2017, you say, since
2015.
So yeah. When did you realize that this was a part of you that needed to come out and needed to live?
So I started having like those sort of like thoughts and ideas about it in, I don't know, like 2006, 2007. I was like 11, 12 years old, and like the thoughts kind of rumble through your head. But obviously with the internet not being quite what it was at the time and like resources not being there and it not being like in the media, you don't know what those feelings are, or maybe you feel like you're the only person that's feeling that way. And then as time has gone on, you know, I kind of learned like other people are this way too, and there's like things you can do about it and whatnot. And it all just kind of culminated like 2015. I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I don't want to be miserable. I want to be happy. I want to be proud. I want to be me. I'm going to do it. I'm going to pursue it. I'm going to live the way that I want to live.
You're from a big family. How was the reaction to that?
Well, there's a reason I no longer speak to said big family.
I am sorry to hear that.
And I mean, it's fine. I made that choice myself, and I'm not trying to say like my family is like they're all terrible people. It was just I knew that I needed to like distance myself from any sort of, you know, discrimination and bias and whatnot, which unfortunately I did face a lot of. And I still have, you know, one or two family members who are supportive, but for the most part, I've just kind of gone about it myself. And, you know, anyone who has a problem with it, that's your problem, not mine. I'm going to keep doing me.
You do hear stories of families who completely divorce themselves emotionally from their children that go through transitions. And then when years go by and they see that actually, no, this was something that they needed to do and I wasn't there for them. Right. Have you had family, like I said, you've had some that have stuck around. Have you had some family that have come back?
I've had some that have tried to. I don't feel like I'm ready for that yet. Yeah. Like I'm still, you know, cause there's a lot of like hurt feelings and whatnot there. And so I'm still trying to like get to the point in my life where like I feel open to having those conversations with them. But never say never. Someday maybe we all just come back together, big happy family. But for now, it just is what it is, and I'm okay with it.
And it's got to be on your terms. It's got to be on your terms.
Oh, 100%.
So as you say, 100%. There was a real discrimination when it came into wrestling in particular, around trans performers and trans athletes, and quite a lot of times in the Attitude Era they were the butts of jokes, and masculine women were certainly spoken of in a very derogatory manner. But then you're entering that world now as well. Who are some of those key people that you got strength from, or you drew strength from as you were breaking in?
It was like I was saying, it's the Nyla Roses, it's the Giselle Shaws, the Kid Bandits, Mariah Marino is another one who I've had a couple of conversations with, who's really great. Dark Chic, Ida Surreal, just the list goes on and on of just amazing queer talent who are just out here. I mean, obviously Kid Bandit, you know, coming from the Nightmare Factory myself, it's just people who are out here doing what so many said that they couldn't do. Like there was a time, I mean, obviously, you know, there's a time when people don't care about women's wrestling, let alone trans women in wrestling. And you have Nyla Rose winning, you know, a major company's championships. It's like seeing stuff like that is just like, it makes you think like, if they can do it, so can I.
And do it you certainly are. You had the first all transgender matches in Tennessee and in Georgia.
And in Alabama.
And in Alabama. Well, this further adds to what I was going to say, because these are places that, in terms of those preconceptions, may not take the incredible work that you're doing the way that it was meant to be taken. With those, so that was must have been a real concern going into it.
Yeah, and it's still an issue that I face. Actually, I had this past weekend, I performed at a show. It was right outside of Chattanooga, Tennessee. It was Scenic City Rumble is what it was called. And there were people who came up to me after the show, and they're like, I'm really sorry what those girls were saying about you. And I'm like, they said something about me? And like insinuating that they were being, you know, hateful. And it's something that, especially working here in the South, I've heard at more shows than, you know, I can count. And I just try and find a way to turn it off and to not acknowledge it. And it's not every show that I work, but there are a lot of shows where the crowds just aren't as accepting as you would have wished that they were.
Do you feel that those preconceptions about the South are quite true then?
It's one of those things, like I said, it depends on the location and it depends on the show. Because like some promotions are a lot more supportive than others. The locker rooms are a lot more supportive than others. I've had some shows where fellow competitors are openly transphobic towards me. And I've probably had some shows that just refuse to book me because of like how I am. But there are at the same time a lot of shows that have opened their arms to me and have been super supportive, and that I haven't heard, you know, those types of, you know, problems and insults at. So it's definitely a mixed bag.
In your first year, you will have you've spoken about, you know, pushing through in the way that you have and overcoming so many other things as well. Mm-hmm. Looking ahead to 2024, it feels as if that there is certainly a changing in my and hearts and minds more than I've ever known it in wrestling.
Right. But
it's easy for me to say that because I'm a cis white male, and I can't. It's actually wrong of me to throw myself into the conversation in that way. Right. So what say you about it, Soraya?
I can definitely see it more so than, you know, maybe a couple years prior. You know, more shows now are open to booking women than maybe they have before, or booking people of color than they were before. You know, a lot of places will run a show for Pride Month. You know, you have companies like AEW who will, you know, or WWE will have like Pride themed gear and donate to charities. And the more that I've like traveled outside of the South, I've kind of experienced like it'd be less and less of an issue. So maybe not so much the South is here yet, but like I feel like a lot of places are kind of growing with the idea of like, yeah, we can wrestle, we can be in this industry.
We've got WrestleMania week coming up in April. You've become a part of Effie's Big Gay Brunch and Effie's and the incredible shows that Effie puts on. Are we seeing you in April?
Not currently booked. I wish that I was, but no one has asked me. So, you know, sad tear, but I understand it. Effie made a wonderful point himself where it's like, you know, WrestleMania weekend is where a lot of these companies, they have to put their best foot forward because they're probably going to get the largest crowds that they get all year and the most attention. So they're going to bust out all the stops. They're going to put on their best talent. And I don't know if it was a full post or a comment to that clip where it's like, it's the reason why I haven't like publicly made any posts being like accepting WrestleMania bookings, because I know that I have a lot to work on before I'm like worthy to be on that level. And like, I'm making progress, but I still have so far to go.
So with that in mind, what are some of the goals that you would like to achieve in the next 12 months then, in your second year of wrestling?
So my initial goal for 2024, I had to make sure it's the right year, was I wanted to double the amount of locations that I had worked in like the past year. So last year I worked in 6 states. So this year I wanted to work in 12 states, which I've done 8 so far. So, you know, we're working on it. But that was my biggest goal for this year. I mean, obviously, you know, if I tried to look beyond that, like I would love to work in another country, or I would love to, you know, maybe do one of the, you know, extra matches on Ring of Honor or something like that. But as for this year, my biggest goal was double the amount of places that I had worked last year and to just keep growing and learning.
You never stop.
No.
You never, never stop.
No, especially not when you're this early on.
Oh, and that's it. And the ground that you've covered in your first year has been incredible. And it's exciting to see that double this year. That's what we're
trying. Yeah. It's the next few months on the calendar look a little light, but we're trying. We're out here. We're grinding. We're doing our best.
As a performer, how do you push through that self-doubt that comes from an empty calendar that does come around? And it's like any freelance gig in the sense that it's feast or famine sometimes, where
right.
you'll suddenly have 300 gigs in one weekend and then you'll have nothing for a month. And then how do you combat that self-doubt that creeps in when you look at an empty calendar?
I think what I've at least been trying to do for this first part of the year is kind of compare it to where I was this time last year. And, you know, last year I had some months where I would go a whole month without having a match, or like a whole month without even getting in a ring. And this year I've, you know, so far I've been at least a couple matches a month, sometimes more. And I've just been trying to stay positive in that way. But even on times when I don't have a match, I'm like, okay, maybe the show's having a seminar that I can go and I can at least learn, or I can go and try and show them what I can do and help out, so that maybe, you know, either that show or a future one, they'll think of me when it comes to booking. And I just try and stay on that hustle as much as I can.
There's a lot of people that forget that part of it. And there are a lot of people that seem to go, well, I'm either going to get booked to wrestle or I'm not going to do anything. And I think what you said there is key, especially when you're so early into your career, that it's just a case of showing your face around the door, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, I mean, and I even did that this weekend. Like, yeah, they asked me to be part of this, you know, this Rumble match, but at the same time, they had a seminar before the show. And I'm like, I'm going to go to the seminar because they'll see that I'm there early. They'll see that I'm putting in the effort. And worst case scenario, even if I don't get a future booking out of it, I've at least gone and continued to grow and learn under someone who's more experienced and who has been doing this longer than I have.
That's it. Every day is a school day. Let's talk a little bit more about your time with Effie's Big Gay Brunch, because it's great to be a it's really gone from strength to strength to strength in the last couple of years, to the point now where it's such a key part of any wrestling weekend or week-long event. There's an Effie's Big Gay Brunch there. How has your experience been as part of Effie's shows?
That was probably the most stressful show that I have ever been a part of from a self perspective. Like I knew that I was on the show at least like two or three months in advance. And I remember going into that show so nervous because it was going to be the largest show I'd ever done. And I personally just didn't feel ready. I don't know if I truly felt like I deserved to be there. And then I found out like 2 days before the show through Effie's podcast, where he was kind of reviewing or like previewing the show, that Cody Rhodes had actually texted him about me being on the show and like how he was like proud that I was going to be on the card because I had like told him that I was doing the show. And so that was just mind blowing to like know that he like thought enough of me to like reach out to Effie. But that show was, it was so amazing. But to walk into that building with all these talent who like everyone knows, like I'm going in there and I'm walking around and seeing, you know, Nick Gage and Effie and Allie and, you know, Mason Mansoor from WWE, who are now killing it on the indies, and just so many others. And I was in tears before I even walked through the curtain because I was so nervous. And to the point where Nick Gage like walked up to me and was like asking if I was okay and like giving me like advice, trying to calm me down. And then he's on commentary. I'm like, oh my God. And then not only to do that, but then to go out there and win the, be the person winning the match. I was speechless. It was such an experience.
To come from somewhere where, as we have talked about, you've combated a lot of discrimination in and outside of the ring, and to suddenly be at Effie's Big Gay Brunch, which is surrounded by love and people that have been through similar battles, it must feel in the strangest but most wonderful way like a homecoming.
100%. And like there were so many people there that like I had, you know, met through various other shows. Like I had met Effie before, and I rode down a couple of people who I was in the match with, rode down with me. And then elsewhere on the card was the tag team known as the Creeps, who are also from, you know, the Georgia area. And just being around all these people, but all in one place, it just, you sometimes go to these shows and maybe you're a little uncomfortable in the locker room because you don't know anyone. But being there, even with people you don't know, like you still just feel so at home because you know everyone there is just so great. But being there, especially with all these people that I'd met throughout the past year, and we're all just kind of celebrating wrestling as ourselves, you can't beat that feeling.
I'm keen to know what advice Nick Gage gave you. Because you say that Nick Gage came over and gave you tips to calm down. And do you know what? I would never have thought Nick Gage was the sort of guy that gives tips on how to calm down.
Yeah, I mean, he was just kind of like being honest with me. He was just kind of like, it's, I mean, it's just a show, it's, you just kind of have to go out there and just like do it and just be you. And like, there's, just kind of like don't overthink it. Like, it's just a show. Like, and like you're gonna be fine. Like, you wouldn't be here if you didn't, like, you weren't supposed to. And there's gonna be more shows in the future, so just like go out there, give it your best, and do what you can.
In my head, I was thinking he was giving you breathing techniques or something.
He's teaching me yoga poses
I learned yoga from Nick.
while he has a pizza cutter in one hand and a stretch in the other.
And we are about to learn your third and final match, Soraya. We've had so far Osprey and Omega, Okada and Omega. Is it a third Omega, I wonder?
So, first match, always first match. Second match, split between two matches. The third one, I wanted some diversity because I'm like, if I'm stuck on an island, I'm constantly watching these three matches. I decided my third match, I'm gonna pick a women's match. I'm gonna set that, stipulation for myself. I have to pick a women's match for my third match. Problem is, I have a list of like seven that I have gone back and forth on all day
Okay.
long. And even up until like this, even up until we started, I've been sitting here, I'm like, is it this one or is it that one? Is it this one or is it that one? But I think for right now, and if you ask me 30 minutes later, it could probably change. But for right now, the third match I'm gonna bring is Masha Slamovich versus Miyu Yamashita from Tokyo Joshi Pro, January 4th, 2024.
Wow, so a really recent one.
I watched it about a month ago, and because I didn't really see anyone talking about it, so like I didn't know that it happened, and I don't remember if I saw like a clip from it, or I was just looking up like good women's wrestling matches to watch. Because like I wanted to like watch some wrestling because sometimes I feel that way, and I saw that they had a match. I knew they were both great. I'm like, all right, gotta go on my way to watch it, and it is like I don't know 16, 17 minutes maybe of them just beating the heck out of each other, and it is great, and they are both amazing. And like I said, you ask me in 20 minutes, it'll probably change to another one on my list of like seven. But for right now, that's match three.
I'm intrigued as to what some of those runners up were
Okay.
that fell away to Yamashita and Slamovich.
Do you want me to read the list?
Go on, man. Let's have the list off you, Soraya.
I got a list. It's like I said, there's like six of
I
them.
really appreciate, by the way, how much you've thought about it. And I say that, and I say that with so much love because there's been a few times, and I won't name because I've loved everybody that's popped onto Cultaholic Island, but there's been a few times where we've come and sat down and I've gone, have you got your three matches? They've gone, oh yeah, I had to pick three matches, didn't I? Oh, well, I don't know. So the fact that you've got a list and it's been, I cannot tell you, Soraya, how honored I am of the effort that you've gone to, and I appreciate it immensely. So
Hey,
thank you.
go big or go home, right?
Go big or
So
go home.
obviously there were plenty of matches I could have had on it that were like men's matches, but because I set my criteria, I'm like I have to have a women's match diversity's sake, and because there's so many good ones, here's the list. So obviously Miyu Yamashita, Masha Slamovich was what we chose. Also on the list was WrestleMania 39, Charlotte Flair versus Rhea Ripley. It's a great
Nice.
match. Athena versus Willow Nightingale, Ring of Honor, Death Before Dishonor, in the main event. Amazing match. So many callbacks to previous, women on the independent scenes. Amazing. I have Kairi versus Mercedes Moné from New Japan Battle in the Valley. It was her first match post, WWE. Amazing match. And then I have Jamie Hayter versus Hikaru Shida from AEW Dynamite, Holiday Bash 2022.
Nice.
And there's even more that I could have played. At one point, I had Sasha Banks versus Bianca Belair from the WrestleMania main event. Like, so many matches.
And what's great is that they're all from the last couple of years, and it just shows you the quality on the independent scene in women's wrestling has been great for so long, but the mainstream sort of brands have really ratcheted it up as well, which has been amazing to see. AEW still gets a lot of grief for the lack of female representation.
They're getting there,
which is nice to see. I'm happy that we got the love from the Tokyo Joshi Pro.
It was a great match, though. I also, and I totally just forgot about this until you mentioned how they're all recent. I actually had one that was a little less recent that didn't make the list, but I also love, and it was from Chikara, and it was Sarah Del Rey versus Kana, also known as Asuka in WWE. They were the main event of a Chikara show, and I have that match like saved on my YouTube. It's just amazing.
I didn't even know that was a thing that happened in Chikara.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting.
It is on YouTube, and it is tremendous.
Well, that's educating. I like that a lot. That's one for me to check. I like it. Soraya, we're heading into your second year, and there's lots of exciting things happening, and I want the world to follow you. Where can people keep an eye on you on socials and stuff?
So my main social media is probably my Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, which is just at Soraya Saber. I have an Instagram, which I don't post on too often, but it's_saber_time, those are probably my main two.
And our Saber Time is up for now, but we are excited to see what you do going forward. Soraya, thank you for joining us on Cultaholic Island. This has been fun. Thank you.
Of course, thank you for having me.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.